This is the Gear Patrol Podcast. In this episode, it's one day after Apple's first big product announcement of 2021, which they called Spring Loaded. Editor Eric Limer and senior staff writer Tucker Bowe talk us through their very fresh and very detailed reactions. We cover updates to Apple Podcasts, a new purple iPhone, the all-new AirTags, the next-generation Apple TV 4K, the colorful new iMacs, and the new iPad Pro. It's a lot of Apple, so I hope you've got an appetite. Thanks for joining us. I'm glad you're here. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Caruso, and you are listening to the Gear Patrol Podcast. I am here with Eric and Tucker from our tech team, and this episode, we are dedicating entirely to talking about announcements and takeaways from yesterday's big Apple event. So Eric and Tucker, hello.
Hello.
Hey.
So yesterday, another in a long series of these big important Apple events, and it was called Spring Loaded. Guys, is that a good name for this event or what?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the Apple event names go, this one was probably like the least punny. I mean, it has to do with spring, the season, obviously. But I don't think any of the announcements involved physical springs, which is, you know, the sort of thing you would usually expect from that. But yeah, I think this was their, at this point, the third or fourth of these events that is all virtual. And so the production level of them has gotten pretty high, pretty corny as well. But that's...
Corny is good.
Yeah, I think Spring Loaded was a good fit just because, I don't know, this is the first kind of exciting Apple event of the year and they announced a bunch of new products and, I don't know, spring you kind of associate with colors and we got colorful iMacs for the first time in forever.
Tucker, tying it back to the products, I like that. So overall impressions, you guys are satisfied, unsatisfied, what do you think?
I think you have to be kind of satisfied because you got a bunch of new products. A bunch of them are fun, especially the new iMacs and the AirTags. The AirTags are kind of an entirely new product line, one that we've been expecting for a while. And then we got some new iPad Pros too. I think a lot of people were expecting like a lot of like subscription updates to Apple One Bundle and like a lot of like software updates coming and like a lot of like kind of less exciting things for people who just want to get their hands on new gadgets. And yeah, we got that this time.
Yeah, we got some hardware. Eric, you feel satisfied?
Yeah, I think there was definitely a world where this event could have been sort of boring, but it was short and it was full of the culmination of a lot of like long-term rumors. And we'll get into it with the iPad Pro, which was sort of a spec bump, but like a lot of it was, like either new stuff or stuff that's like meaningfully different than it has been in the past, which always makes it more interesting than just like, it's the new chip, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So let's get into it then. I want to get through a couple much smaller announcements and then we'll go into the big four, I guess. The first, there was this somewhat vague update to Apple Podcasts, which is obviously relevant to what we're doing now. Eric, can I?
Yeah. So it was one of those things. It was one of the, at the beginning of these events, there were usually a couple of really small announcements that are sort of glossed over. This was one that we didn't get a ton of detail about, but basically it looks like a redesign of the Apple Podcast apps with increased functionality around like discovery, right? So like trying to like find and interact with new podcasts. I believe there was a line in the presentation that was about like, you know, subscribing to, you know, podcasts to like, you know, support your favorite ones or whatever, which was like sort of like, it sounded like kind of Patreon-y, but there were no specifics around what support like means, whether it's like, you know, support your favorite team or whatever, or but it was definitely like hinting towards, definitely it was the first time the idea occurred to me that it was like, oh yeah, I guess Apple could do, you know, Patreon but for podcasts in the podcast app.
Yeah, it's like a subscription model, it seems like. So obviously creators will have to pay a little bit to be part of this, but then people who subscribe to the podcast can also pay a little fee and get extra content and no ads and that kind of thing. And Tucker, any thoughts on podcasts?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a pretty big change for Apple, and that they are, it seems like they're taking podcasts more seriously, and people are gonna, and they're gonna have some kind of exclusive podcasts and offer creators I guess more incentive to put their podcasts out exclusively to Apple. But yeah, it's one of those things we have to wait and see how it kind of shapes up. Right. Yeah, as someone who listens to a lot of podcasts, I'm interested.
You listen to this one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. Next one, iPhone. This is a super, super brief little tidbit we were tossed, but there is a purple iPhone now. First time.
Yeah, it's kind of a light purple, but it's just for the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 12 mini, so not the the Pro models. It looks very Eastery, I would say.
Yeah, it definitely looks nice, and a great way for Apple to try and spike the sales of two of its iPhone models. Like, what is this, 6 months after the release, halfway through the product cycle, because we're going to be expecting the new ones in the fall. So, you know, if you like purple a lot, maybe that's worth it for you. Just a little thing to observe there.
For sure. That's a good insight. Let's move on to a big announcement. This is the big new product of the event, AirTags. And they're finally here. Tucker, you're grinning, so I'm going to ask you what you think about the AirTags first. And can you give us a little rundown?
It's more grinning on just your reaction. But so AirTags are these kind of like tile-like trackers that use Apple's Find My Network. So in the same way, like if you misplaced your AirPods or your iPhone or your other kind of Mac iPad, you can use the Find My Network to track kind of any gadget with these AirTags. They're $29 a pop, or you can get a 4-pack for $99. And these things have been rumored for like 2.5 years and or maybe longer than that. They're finally here. It's one of those weird products that like it's cool because it's something completely new for Apple, but it's also, I don't know, I think I'm one of the least excited about it because I have very little things that I want to actually track. I use Apple's like Find My app maybe like 2 or 3 times a year. I could be in the minority, and I haven't used a Tile in years. People are really excited about this.
I got you into a rant before we even got to describe the things. Eric, I'm going to ask you to do that while Tucker cools off a little bit. Can you just tell me what these are like physically?
Yeah. So they look like, it looks like a Mentos. It is a little disc, right? I actually don't totally know the scale. I think it's probably a little bit smaller than a quarter, and it's Apple smooth and white on the one side, and on the other side it's metal and it has the Apple logo. You can get it engraved with like an emoji on the top or some letters and stuff for free if you order it from Apple. But that's it. It's just this little, it's like this little pocket fidget stone or whatever. It's got Apple's U1 chip inside of it, which is a ultra band radio, so similar to some of the 5G stuff, right? So it's a close range thing, like Tucker was saying, it works with the Find My Network, which means that like if you open the Find My app on your iPhone, it will show a map and show the location of like the last known location of various objects, including, you know, trackers. But also because of this U1 chip, it enables a feature called precision finding. I believe that's what it's called. And so this is available with phones that also have the U1 chip, so they can like see each other.
Is just the iPhone 11 and iPhone 12.
Yes. And so if you have one of those, you can, the Find My app will actually like act like a dowsing rod, and it'll show an arrow pointing directly towards the tracker, and it will it'll vibrate and stuff. And so this is very clearly, I think to me, clearly some beta stuff for like, you know, there have been rumors about the Apple glasses, augmented reality glasses, for ages. And you can see how this would dovetail with that, where it's like, oh, if you're wearing, you know, your Apple glasses in 2025 or whatever, all your little AirTags like light up in your field of vision. Right. But for now, you have to use a phone for that.
Precision finding. I thought it was really interesting the way it uses that chip. It uses from what I understand, it coordinates a few different parts in the phone. It's the camera and the accelerometer give you the haptic feedback. And it does look like you said, like a dowsing rod. It looks like a tracking chip that you'd see in some knockoff spy movie, right? You like throw it on the guy's collar and you put your phone on your dashboard and it's like a blip in the city, right?
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that's like super helpful. Like if you use the Find My Network, it's like, it'll like guide you to a certain location. But like once you get into Bluetooth range, that's when this kind of precision tracking kicks in and you could like actually like find exactly where your AirTag is. If it's like in like underneath this cushion or like behind this object, or like you can actually like pinpoint exactly where it is. And I think, that's kind of a neat thing that takes the Find My Network to kind of another level.
Sure. Eric.
So worth noting a couple of things at this point, which is that we haven't had the chance to play with any of these yet. So our like impressions of how it works are based basically just on, you know, what the spec sheet says, briefings and whatever. So it's a little bit hard to give the exact experience. Another thing to mention is that, especially in regards to what you were saying about the tracking device, Nick, Apple says that there are various features with this designed to make them impossible to use as unwanted tracking devices, right? Because this is an issue that people had brought up when the idea of this was just being rumored, right? Like, you know, Apple doesn't want to be in the business of making a device that, you know, an abuser could slip into somebody's bag in order to like keep track of them when they, you know, try to leave the house or whatever. Right. So I believe that some of the features, like this is stuff that we'll want to test out. But it appears that part of the way that this works is that your phone, Find My, has some way of recognizing like unconfirmed trackers in the vicinity. So it'll be interesting to see how that stuff plays out. But it's definitely worth noting that fighting against that use case was definitely something that was in mind in the design process for this device.
Yeah, and you know, this has been part of the conversation around these for a long time. But when it popped up on the event, after years, my brain was still like, oh, they're going to be tracking me. So it's an interesting time to be introducing more tracking devices, basically.
Yeah. The other thing to say there is that Apple says so the way this system works is that everything is anonymized. So, and this is how a lot of Apple's privacy infrastructure works in general. But essentially, everything is anonymized. So the specific identity of specific trackers and specific people should be obscure to everyone, including Apple. But that also like doesn't change the fact that like you're right. These are like literally tracking devices, you know.
Yeah. I was looking. So we posted an image of the AirTags on Instagram yesterday, Gear Patrol did. And a lot of people commented, people are really interested in this. We asked what people will use them for. My favorite is probably a 10 millimeter socket. As someone who works on a car, that's the one you always lose. Some people said their kids. Some people said, my bicycle. Are saying that it's just a ripoff of Tile. What are you guys going to track with AirTags, like that aren't your Apple devices? That's what I'm curious about. Like, what do you use these for?
My thought would be to put it on my keys, which is like the main thing, which brings up one other note here. The design of these is very clever in that it is just a circle. So like Tile and like Samsung's thing, I forget what that's called off the top of my head, but these devices had, you know, like a little hole in them so that you could attach them with just like a normal like key ring thing. Yeah. But Apple's devices are a little smooth stone, which is like, you know, nice and minimalist in the one sense, but in the other sense, it means that you need accessories to attach them to things. So there's going to be this whole big secondary market about like keychains or whatever. I mean, I assume you could also duct tape it to something.
Right. But yeah, that's something I was going to ask. They're not sticky, right?
No.
Like you have to drop it into something or have a, a dedicated accessory like a keychain. Yeah. Probably and sold Apple, by Apple or whomever.
Right. Yeah. There's, we'll have a story up this on the site about this. So there are a number of accessories out there already from keychains, but then like also like slightly more interesting things, you know, like what are they called for glasses? The you know, the old lady thing.
Oh, the croaky.
Yeah. Okay. That is what they're called. There's like an AirTags croaky and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see. But it'll definitely be fun to see what sort of weird use cases people get up to, and hopefully not that many of them are nefarious.
My last question for this is how thick it is. It looks like it's about the size of a quarter, but like, is it super thin, like a watch battery, or is it, you know, like an ice cream sandwich? I can't really tell.
It actually uses those little circular, whatever you call those, are the batteries. So it doesn't charge like via, you know, lightning or USB or wireless. So you actually have to, the battery, I think it lasts about a year, but it uses those things. But I think it's actually thicker than you might think. Like, I think, like Eric said in the beginning, a Mentos is kind of a good kind of sized object to compare it with.
I just dropped a watch battery that I was going to hold up and show.
I was going to say
people
that
who
like
can't see me.
It's interesting because, like, again, this is one of the things where, like, especially with these events being all virtual or whatever, of like none of us have actually like held one of these yet, which is, you know, going to be a seeing these in real life. I think will be will give some greater shape, as it were, to like, you know, what they actually are. I think they're fun in that one of the rare things that you get from a tech release these days is a product that has like non-obvious use cases. And so that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested to see who finds a way to break these, use them in a unexpected way that maybe Apple will shut down and maybe Apple will allow.
To hack them.
Yeah.
Next product on my list is the Apple TV 4K, which has existed, but this is a new version. There's a lot of new stuff going on here, including the addition of the A12 Bionic chip and a new remote with all sorts of features.
This is actually not the it's not a huge new product. It's just kind of an upgrade of the previous Apple TV 4K, which I don't think has been updated in several years. They essentially updated it with a better processor, compatibility with HDMI 2.1 instead of 2.0, and they kind of gave it a fancy new remote, which people have been kind of asking for forever. I think, again, another polarizing topic. I think I was one of the few people in the world that actually liked the old remote, the Siri remote, and the new one looks similar, but instead of the trackpad, it has actual directional buttons. It has a dedicated button for Siri and a dedicated button for turning on and off your TV, and it's just apparently it's a little thicker and got like a little more kind of ergonomic design. So it should actually, I think one of the biggest complaints with Apple, the Siri remote has been that it's, you know, it slides between your cushion and it's difficult to find. But
yeah,
this one's the similar size. So, but
I think
people like it.
The other common complaint about the old Siri remote, and I never used it that much myself, but that it's essentially symmetrical, so that it's hard to tell which side is up if you're not looking at it, which is sort of not great for a remote, especially in the dark. And so a note about the new remote that Tucker just described is that obviously it comes with the new Apple TV 4K, which starts at $179, but you can just also buy it on its own for $59. So if you want to just upgrade your old Apple TV with a new remote, that is a option that is on the table for you for less than half the cost of the new one.
Right. Which brings up a point. My question about this is, and maybe I'm off base, this is just my personal perception, but one of the issues with Apple TV, even though it's a great product and, you know, functions extraordinarily well, is that it's much more costly than other streaming sticks, for instance, like a Fire Stick from Amazon. So first of all, just getting the remote, maybe the price barrier isn't there so much, but like, is this a big enough upgrade overall to win over more people from inexpensive Fire Sticks and such?
I think it depends. I think the big upgrade is that, again, the processor and then the support for the HDMI 2.1, meaning that it's just gonna work better, and it supports higher frame rates, and it's just gonna look and work a lot better if you bought a TV within the last like 2 or 3 years. If you already have an Apple TV 4K, it's probably incremental update. I would say.
Eric, is that true up with what you think?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to a Chromecast guy. I've been using a Chromecast for like, what, however long, 8 years now,
yeah,
however long
time,
they've existed.
Right.
I've never felt the need for anything beyond that. The new Apple TV 4K, if you want to play Apple Arcade games on your TV with it, then right. Like, yeah, sure. Especially, you know, that new chip will work wonders for you. There's also a feature on there that allows you to color calibrate your screen by using an iPhone, which is very cool.
Yes.
Potentially, I mean, I don't know how useful that is for like the normal people. I do suspect that this is a feature that may make its way into Apple's like displays, the like Pro displays, which would be. That would be like super cool as somebody who has tried to color calibrate a display and then given up after 5 minutes because it's hopelessly complicated.
Right. So let's explain that real quick for anyone who hasn't color calibrated a monitor or display before. You're talking about getting the truest color representation on your display, like true to life, right? And you can calibrate that using the phone. How does that work?
It's using the iPhone's cameras as the calibrator. So if you want to, prior to this, color calibrating a screen, at least in my understanding, like I said, I never actually did it. But generally, if you want to do it right, requires actually acquiring a piece of hardware, which is a camera that you point at the screen, and then the screen shows you a color, and the camera checks, and it's like, is this the color it's supposed to be? And then they work together.
Right. I believe the display itself shows a color, and your camera on your iPhone detects it and checks it against, I don't know, real life, and then changes your settings. It's confusing to me, though. Tucker, maybe you know this. Will that work on any TV? Will it just color calibrate like my 4-year-old HD TV, or do I have to have some sort of hardware in there?
Again, I don't exactly know off the top of my head. I think generally, it's if you have a newer TV, it's gonna kind of. Be able to tell the TV settings or get the and just make and make it look the best. Again, I'm not 100% sure. Yep. about that.
Well, a lot of this remains to be seen. That's a big part of an Apple event, is that this is just an announcement and we have to get our hands on it to see the details. I'm not sure we mentioned price, but I have here, there are two storage sizes for the Apple TV. One is 32 gigs, that's $179, and then twice that, 64 gigs for $199. And then Eric, you said the remote you can get separately for $59.
Correct.
Okay, next big, and this is a big announcement. I didn't mean to be outsized about the AirTags. The iMac harkens to the past a little bit with some colors and stuff. So who wants to take that? I've got all the specs in front of me, but I want to challenge one of you to do it.
So the big update is that it's, well, obviously they have the new M1 chips, which kind of Apple introduced at the end of last year to its to MacBook, entry-level MacBook, MacBook Air, MacBook Pro, and Mac Mini lines. So this thing is going to have all the kind of efficiency and performance upgrades that those computers were able to do. So that's exciting. But yeah, the big thing is that Apple kind of has reintroduced colors, and these new iMacs come in 7 different colors. Everything from like red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and white actually too. It doesn't come in space gray or I'm blanking out on, or silver. Those are the two colors that traditionally has. So it comes in colorful colors, not the original ones.
It's the colors. It's a lot of the colors from that original sort of Apple logo, right? The jewel tone kind of rainbow.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so it's a 24-inch display rather than the 21.5-inch entry-level iMac. So this is effectively taking place, replacing that entry-level iMac. And Apple kind of, in addition to upgrading the it with the M1 chip, they gave it a bunch of new internals, new microphones, new speakers. It's got a better 1080p camera webcam. And so kind of everything you'd want in kind of a work from home kind of desktop computer. It also has some like nerdy things too, like the way the power cord connects to the back of it. It has it magnetically connects, sort of like MagSafe. It's not MagSafe, but it magnetically connects, and it's got a new power adapter that's got that's integrated with a kind of an Ethernet port.
Right. So you've run through the whole list there. Let's break it down a little bit. So first of all, the form of the computer has changed quite a bit. There's a new stand. The display itself is much thinner.
It's so thin. I think that is really one of the most notable things about it. Well, it's funny, right? Because it's one of the most notable things about it in that it is the thing that you notice when you look at it. It's like, oh, this is a giant iPad Air on a stand, right? Yes. But it's also like a desktop computer, so it kind of doesn't matter how thin it is.
It's 12 millimeters thin, right?
A fun little fact about the thinness is that the 3.5 millimeter jack on the side is for headphones is on the side because it couldn't be on the front or the back because the display actually isn't thin enough to accommodate the full length of a headphone plug.
That's a great length for Apple to go to get rid of a headphone jack, right?
Yeah, still there, but it's on the side. And so the other thing is, like I was saying, is it does look like a giant iPad. It still has the chin on the bottom. Bezels, the plastic part that goes around the screen. The bezel on the bottom of the screen is extra thick, right? So there's like this big band of plastic, you know, colored plastic now at the bottom. And then the rest of it is screen. And
that houses some specific stuff. Tucker, you mentioned fans, I think, or maybe I just made that up. Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh, you were mentioning some speakers is what you mentioned. And I pictured round things. And then I thought about fans.
Both things they move air.
Yes, but the fans are a significant part of this, right? They have better, like two, as I understand it, two fans in place of however many before in a different place to allow for that super thin form.
Yeah, I think they integrated all the kind of hardware at the bottom, like Eric was saying, at the chin. So you get this kind of edge-to-edge display, which is really nice, except for the kind of the bottom of it. It should be kind of interesting to, because the whole kind of one of the great things about the M1 chip is it allows for more power from performance without having to kick into these fans or actually take advantage of them. So this computer should be very, very quiet for most people, depending on kind of what you're doing and like doing like high-end like photo editing or something like that. It's exciting.
What do I have? Up to four USB-C ports, right? Two of them could be Thunderbolt. That's huge on the back of this thing. I mean, for creators and people who just want all the ports and the access and the peripherals and all the stuff.
And big for companies that make docks from USB-C to all of the other ports that you might need.
Right. And then you mentioned earlier, Tucker, 1080p FaceTime camera. So like a higher resolution camera, correct?
Yeah, it's still not 4K webcam, which I think a lot of people kind of are craving for, but it should be kind of a big improvement over the webcams that have kind of been in previous iMacs. Again, like everyone's working from home, so kind of Apple beefed this up with everything kind of you'd need: better speakers, better mics, better webcam.
Speakers support spatial audio.
Yes. Dolby Atmos.
Can you explain what that is for anybody who doesn't know?
Dolby Atmos. It's kind of an immersive sound technology that kind of creates virtual height and side channels so that you kind of feel like you're in a movie, or you feel like you're kind of things are flying over you and around you. So it's just an immersive sound technology. Obviously, if you want to, I mean, this is diving in the weeds, and if you want to get like a home theater set up and you have like dedicated speakers for kind of height and side channels, it's going to sound better. But a lot of speakers and headphones support Dolby Atmos.
Eric, can you tell me about the power adapter and the magnetic sort of situation there?
Yeah, it's neat. It's it reminds me of it's similar to MagSafe, right? Like the old MagSafe, where you used to have the power adapters that would would attach, you know, magnetically to the old MacBooks. This one is circular, and it like plugs into the back of the iMac and then sort of like locks in there magnetically. It looks, I won't lie, it looks incredibly satisfying.
Yes.
It sort of reminds me of like, it seems like plugging the like fuel hose into like a F1 car or something. It seems, it seems pretty sweet. There also or is
like,
just,
I was going to say it's like the neural shunt in the Matrix or something, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's a way better touchstone. Yeah. But yeah, and then so the other thing that is nice about it, a little quality of life thing, is that this big power wire also carries your Ethernet. So if you're plugging into Ethernet, you plug that into the power brick beneath your desk or whatever, and then there's just this one big. I mean, by big, I mean like I don't know what's a good. Like a little bit thicker than a big Slim Jim. I don't know. But the power cable is the one thing that'll come up from the top of your desk and plug into the back. So you don't have to worry about, having multiple cables come in from your wall if you're connected by Ethernet, which if you have a desktop, you probably should be connected by Ethernet if it's possible, because it'll make your life a little bit better.
Yeah, this is not even like super hard fanboying right here. This is a beautiful piece of hardware. The braided cable, the magnetic sort of satisfying attachment and all that.
Yeah. The fact that it doesn't come in neutral colors though is a little bit off-putting to me.
Oh, that's right. It's color matched to the the case.
Well, and just the fact that as Tucker highlighted before, of like it comes in colors, but it does not come in silver and it does not come in black, at least not yet, which I mean it's cool, I guess, but that would make me panic if I was trying to fit something into my home office and it had to have a strong color. Like, I don't know.
Like lavender doesn't work. Tucker, let's let you rip about the keyboard. So we have three keyboards and a couple other peripherals. Is that correct?
So Apple announced a new keyboard, wireless keyboard, wireless mouse, and wireless trackpad that come bundled with the new iMacs, and they are colored to match. So if you get a red iMac, you're going to get a red keyboard and red wireless mouse or trackpad, depending on what you get. With the entry level models, there's a dedicated button for an emoji, whatever. But the cooler thing is if you get kind of the more advanced, it's not more advanced, but just like kind of an upgraded iMac bundle, they come with a wireless keyboard with Touch ID. So you can unlock your computer just with your kind of fingerprint.
And user switching too, right?
You can. Exactly. So it can identify whose finger it is and kind of open to that profile. But yeah, I think what you mean when it comes in three different designs is you can get it with or without the kind of Touch ID. And then obviously you can get configured with the kind of number pad. Additional number pad, just like you would before. So I don't think it's like a huge, the design, it looks almost exact aside from the colors and the Touch ID. It doesn't look any different from kind of the Magic Keyboard and the Magic Mouse or Magic Trackpad that Apple has previously been offering. But it's kind of just like kind of a welcome upgrade that people
just moves us into the modern era.
Yeah.
Gotta get our, that 100 emoji at our fingertips.
I think people were hoping for maybe like Face ID or something on these iMacs. They didn't get that, but they got Touch ID, which is
I think that's actually a interesting thing to note too. I think the fact that we got Touch ID on these iMacs as opposed to Face ID, and the rumors are that in the next iPhone or at least future iPhones, that Touch ID is going to be coming back, and the touch sensor is going to be through the screen. Which is almost definitely going to happen. Other companies already provide this with, sometimes the experience isn't so great. But I think that the speculation here, obviously, but I think that the fact that this iMac has Touch ID instead of Face ID working through the webcam is a bit of an indication that like Apple is getting ready to move back to Touch ID. And then, looking back on it years from now, it may be clearer that, Face ID was sort of a bridge for the gap for those few iPhones that didn't have a button, but also couldn't do fingerprints under the screen yet.
The other thing I'm not totally clear on is the a huge complaint with Apple peripheral users of the Magic Mouse. Is this thing still flipped to charge where you have to like the charging port?
Yeah,
on the
bottom? It still kind of doesn't solve that kind of issue of, yeah, you have to turn it over, plug the lightning cable in, and
that's so annoying.
Yeah, it'd be nice if anybody like wirelessly charge or something like that, but
move the charging port.
They're just doubling down on it at this point of being like, it was never a mistake and it's not a problem. And if it's a problem for you, then you're using it wrong. Just remember to charge your mouse when you're not using it, and it's not a design flaw.
Exactly. Yeah. If anybody hasn't had the pleasure of using one of the newer Magic mice, I don't know what you guys say. The charging port is literally on the bottom. So you cannot use the mouse while you're charging it. And you have to like flip it over like a dead beetle.
It's a great excuse if you don't want to do things for a while, though.
Yeah, if it's yeah. Right. Sorry, I'm charging my terribly designed. Okay. In addition to those things, much faster CPU. The graphics card is way, way faster, up to 2 times faster.
We're at the point in the nostalgia cycle where I will admit it. I wish that these new iMacs were translucent. I think that would be cool.
CC Tim on that one. Let's just let's tag him on the social media. Let's tag him on the Twitter. Let's air tag him. It's a bad riff. Okay, so these start at $1,299. The iMac starts at $1,299. Also going to be available in the coming weeks. So URL down below. Last product. Big product. The iPad Pro. Big updates here. We've got the M1 chip. We've got a humongous jump in performance, like a 50% they're quoting. There's like game controller support. There's huge storage options. Eric, do you have an overview of the new iPad Pro you want to give us?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with the new iPad Pro, with the M1 chip, and you know, if you watch the promos, you'll see it in the sort of stand with the keyboard. An interesting question to ask at this point is, what precisely is the difference between the iPad Pro and a MacBook? Now, obviously there are differences, but there are fewer differences than ever. And you know, this new iPad Pro is like one step towards the thing that if you've been following Apple products, for any amount of time, people have been talking about the iOS, macOS convergence for ages. But like with the M1 chip stuff, like we're really getting there. We're like more than ever, the iPad Pro is kind of a form factor of a MacBook, which I think is really interesting.
I just must insist that no one tries to fold their iPad Pro like they would their MacBook. That would not go well. Honestly, I mean, like you said earlier, the iMac is a big iPad. Is a MacBook without a keyboard is an iPhone.
With the exception of the iPhone, those other products are all operating on the same chip. Like the iMac, the iPad Pro, and the M1 MacBooks are all have the same M1 chip, right? So that's the silicon brain. Mm-hmm. And obviously the degree to which that chip can sort of do its business depends on the amount of RAM you have available and the amount of cooling that's available, et cetera. So, you know, there's variation between these devices, but like, you know, on from the outside, but also like on the inside, like these things are extremely similar. And like one of the talking points with the iMac stuff, to just hop back there for a second, was just like, yeah, it can run because the M1 chip is, you know, functionally pretty similar to the chips on iPhones. You know, you can pass your applications back and forth. You know, these M1 chips can run iOS device or iOS applications natively. So a lot of stuff's really coming together here.
Yeah, it's wild. There's a joke in the car community about putting an LS into a modded car. An LS is a really common V8 engine from back in the day, and people are like, oh, you got a Miata? Put an LS in it, like LS swap it. Sounds like what people are doing, what Apple is doing with the M1 chips. Like, we got a device, put the M1 in it. Okay, I want to make sure we cover any top level specs here. We got the M1 chip, big jump in performance as a result. Up to 2 terabytes. People, creatives are going to love this. Up to 2 terabytes of storage in an iPad, which I think is wild. Their Thunderbolt port. That's a big one.
Yeah, I would just jump in and say that, like, the big changes aside from the kind of M1 chip and the display, which we'll get into in a second, the support for Thunderbolt USB-C and then support for 5G. So basically, you can put a 5G chip in this thing and kind of take it kind of anywhere, which is kind of the world we live in right now. It's cool. And then the support for Thunderbolt just essentially means that you can kind of connect it to higher end SSDs and even actually connect it to your Pro XDR display if you have one of the Apple's like $5,000 really nice displays, and kind of use this as a secondary screen. This thing is kind of a beast. I know we haven't kind of there's 2 different models. There's the 11 inch and the 12.9 inch iPad Pro. And both kind of got all these updates, and they look pretty much identical to previous generations. So it's not like a drastic redesign, but it's they have these performance bumps. And then the 12.9 inch model has the much improved screen, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it right now. Why don't you tell us about that display?
So yeah, this is one of the things that has been long rumored about, but Apple integrated the 12.9 inch model with its what it's calling Liquid Retina XDR kind of display, and that's has 10,000 mini LEDs, which is and essentially what this means is that like this thing is gonna be able to produce like really really nice blacks and get really bright and have really great contrast. And if you're kind of a creative doing a lot of photo or video editing, it's going to be great. And if you're just someone who kind of watches kind of movies on your iPad, this thing is going to promises to look spectacular. Basically, it takes a lot of the technology that was in Apple's, like we said, Apple's Pro XDR display, $5,000, or I think it's like a little more than that actually. Took a lot of that technology and integrated it into a smaller form factor in this iPad Pro, which is actually really interesting because a lot of people are kind of like, you can kind of, if you don't want to spend big on this kind of Pro XDR, like you can get a lot of these kind of same benefits with just this significantly, because the 12.9 inch is iPad Pro is going to cost, I think it costs $1,099. That's what it starts at. So you can get kind of a wonderful, wonderful screen that's obviously not as big as the Pro XDR, but or nowhere near as big. But
still really amazing.
Yes.
And also on the front of the iPad Pro is a camera.
Yeah, so there is the ultra wide camera on the front, which the iPad Pro has been sort of the leading edge of where Apple is putting some of its more advanced camera technology. So now we've got this ultra wide angle on there. And it's one of those things where I mentioned the sort of specter floating off in the distance of Google Glasses AR stuff. And this is again a situation where it's like you can sort of see how the iPad Pro sort of like continues to be a device that can be used to like sort of start feeling around in that space, which is going to be important for developers to play around with having ideas and like stuff to work with on that front, so that when the AR goggles inevitably come, that there's stuff to go for.
And then there's also the tech in the camera called Center Stage, which is kind of a neat trick.
Yeah, I would touch on this. So yeah, Center Stage is just kind of utilizes the ultra wide camera on the iPad Pro to kind of enhance, I guess, video calls and it's specifically for FaceTime. So if you are on a phone call, it will zoom in on you and zoom out if you kind of move around kind of the picture. And if someone else jumps into kind of your FaceTime The camera will pan back out, so like both of you guys are in frame. But this is, I mean, it's not just for FaceTime. It'll work with a bunch of conferencing apps, like Zoom, and
oh,
it's
cool.
I'm pretty sure it's an open API, so I think anyone can kind of make apps take advantage of this feature that it's called Center Stage. Other companies have done things like this that kind of like track you around and kind of expand the frame of the video to make sure that you're in focus and other people are in focus if they're in the video. But yeah, it's nice that Apple is kind of making these kind of
jumping on the board.
Yeah.
So I want to actually spend a second on this because it's not just like if your iPad's on your desk and you lean one way or another. In the demo at the event, the scenario was the iPad's on the kitchen counter and I think a dad is like cooking and he's standing in front of it. And then he walks several feet over to the stove. And because it's an ultra wide camera, the thing can pan digitally all the way over and keep him right in the middle. It's really kind of an impressive parlor trick. And I think a lot of people, not just a parlor trick, I don't mean to be demean it, but like a lot of people who use these devices are using them for this kind of purpose. So that's probably quite appealing.
Yeah. You see that, like, I don't know, Facebook and Amazon, especially Amazon with the Echo Show 10, like have these devices that kind of rotate around and track you that way and keep you in focus. This isn't going to track you obviously because the iPad isn't going to move itself, but yeah, the ultrawide camera, is going to, you know, make sure that, you're kind of always in focus and in frame.
Okay. So that's the iPad Pro. Starts still, I think the prices are the same, or at least they start at the same, $799 for the 11 inch and then, $1099 for the 12.9 inch. And that all launches about the same time. Links are below.
One thing to note about the 12 inch is that it comes with two loadouts for RAM, which I believe is 8 and 16. It's the most RAM that they've put in an iPad Pro, but you need to buy the big storage if you want the RAM. So
that's the 2 terabyte thing.
Yeah, you'll be in for at least a terabyte. There's more RAM in the 1 and 2 terabytes.
Okay, that's everything. There's six products we covered. That's a lot of information. Do we have any sort of final thoughts or personal favorites or disappointments in the overall event, Tucker?
I wouldn't say there's any disappointments. I think we got more hardware than we were expecting. It's exciting to see. I'm specifically excited to see the iMac, the new iMacs, and play with them in person. And the AirTags are something that intrigues me. But like I said at the top of the show, that I don't know. I've never been one to kind of really kind of crave tracking a lot of my gadgets. But we'll see. You know.
You respect your gadget's sovereignty, Eric. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was interesting. I mean, to sort of like counterpoint that, I think the AirTags are the most interesting thing to happen in a while. I do misplace my stuff all the time, but the thing about the AirTags that is like appealing to me is that it is, you know, I said this before about like things that are sort of unique in tech releases. And that's sort of unique in a tech release, in that I can actually like see it improving my day-to-day life in like a meaningful way. Being able to pull up an app and press a button that will make my keys whistle so that I can find them when I'm trying to leave the house is a marked quality of life improvement that is like far beyond any amount of like joy or use I could get out of a chip that makes stuff like load 50% faster. And so that's really appealing to me in like just sort of a base use case. And of course, I mean, like we said before, this isn't new. You know, there have been other items that do this. Apple just has the ability to sort of like really force things through essentially with its like huge install base. So you can sort of be sure that like, you know, this stuff will get taken up and reasonably sure that like it won't be left behind, right? Like if you buy some little third-party tracker, it's like, well, I don't know, is this company still going to exist in 2 years when Apple releases the thing that puts them out of business? You know, and that's a real concern, but it's less of a concern when Apple is putting out the thing, for better or for worse.
Yeah, that's a great point about quality of life over a faster chip. Soundbite of the year. Well, that's all we're going to have time for today for the Gear Patrol podcast. Eric and Tucker, thank you for being here. And listeners, everything we talked about today is going to be linked in the show notes. And we have several posts on gearpatrol.com, which will also be linked down there. So check them out to your heart's content and subscribe to the podcast, maybe on Apple Podcasts, so that you don't miss more episodes. And speaking of that, did you know that 5-star reviews help jog the old algorithm and get more people to find us and join the conversation? Well, they do. Take my word for it. Leave us a 5-star review, please. And if you do, ask for a product recommendation and we'll see about getting you some purchasing advice from our editors on a future episode. And then questions, comments, anything else can be sent to me at podcast@gearpatrol.com. Thank you again, Eric and Tucker. Did you have a good time today?
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's always fun to unpack this stuff, and especially like I enjoy having the space to like noodle about the broader implications of what's happening.
Good. There's going to be a lot more noodling, so buckle up. Everybody, I'm Nick Caruso. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're well, and until next time, take care.